stiff arm. Gore cuts it inside. Frank Gore is still going. Touchdown, San Francisco.
Two from the 40, couple of tight ends, receiver right and Adrian. Hand off Adrian. Scoots loose up the middle. Across the 30, to the 20, inside the 10. Touchdown!
First down and 10, Johnson. Gets a shoulder square. Watch out! He's got getting away from the top speed. Touchdown!
Welcome in to Grinding the Edge here on South Harmon. I'm your host, Koopa, and you can find me on X at Dynasty Koopa and on Discord at KoopaTroopa8. I hope you had a great championship week for all of your fantasy teams. I know that I had an enjoyable time watching football, even though my teams did not do as well as I had hoped. My teams I was hoping would win a little bit more than they did, I ended up with only one out of my six teams that were in a championship game actually coming out with the victory. But that's just variance, and we know that that is the case, and we need to just move on and continue working towards next year, and continue working on refining our process, learning what we've learned from this year, and trying to find the optimal way to play Dynasty as the landscape shifts around us. So, for my first episode of the offseason, I want to just review back on something that I talked about throughout this season. And it is the tight ends don't matter strategy. As a quick recap, from episode 2 of this podcast, I talked about the tight ends don't matter strategy, where you don't put any value into your tight end, and you try and sell your tight end for literally anything your league is willing to give you, and you build your tight end room entirely off of the waiver wire. You only go and get tight ends who are outside of those who are rostered on any team. And so the way I did this was I was just looking at who was on waiver wire pods. Specifically, I was looking at the one here on this South Harmon feed because Eric goes into really deep dynasty buys. And so every single week, I'd have a couple options to choose from. And of course, you could choose to keep the tight end that you had already for the following week. Even if he was somebody that had been bumped up to the point where, yeah, everybody owned him. If you got him first, obviously you still have him. So the idea was you put all of that value out of the tight end position and into other positions in order to upgrade your lineup. However, I found that for myself this past season, it was a little bit harder to put that into practice. In terms of where I was expecting to put that value, I was expecting to take the extra second or extra third that I had at my tight end position, and it gives me a spot start at running back that I need. It gives me an upgrade at the wide receiver position, something along those lines. And in none of my leagues where I was trying this strategy, did that actually pan out. I didn't actually take that value and put it into somewhere that I wanted it to be. And I don't know whether that is me getting unlucky with trades, whether it's even my trading style, or whether it's even just a factor of how this season played out. Usually you would expect to see a lot more running back injuries than happened this year, and that just didn't happen. And that was where I was planning to see a lot of that value go. I expected to see it go into the running back position and kind of backfill those guys as the season went on. But that isn't what happened. The running backs didn't get hurt near as much this season, at least at the top end. And so I didn't need replacements. I had just enough guys, and by the time I got to the end of the season, maybe the teams where I would be looking to spend that on getting a running back in order to try and make a playoff run, those playoff opportunities never materialized because those top teams did not fall apart in the ways that I was expecting. So, as we're going through this strategy, I also need to pay attention to how realistic is it that you need to employ something like this. So I'm going to go through my tight ends don't matter results from this past season, because every single week I chose a tight end, I looked at how many points they got me that week, and I chose a new one for the following week. I'm going to quickly run through and look at what I was able to produce, and then talk about how important is it that I actually do this and rely on this strategy year after year. So week one, I had Johnny Munt to get me 3.5 points. Week two, Jordan Akins got me 2 points. Week three, Tommy Tremble got me 5.9 points. This is the first time that I think I had a decent result out of my tight end position. The other two were better than nothing, but they weren't really great. Week 4, 5, and 6 were really rough. Week 4, I had Tommy Tremble give me 0 points, and then week 5, I got negative 0.3 points off of Tommy Tremble because he had a catch for 7 yards, and then he lost a fumble when he got knocked out of the game with a concussion. Week 6, I went for his backup, Ian Thomas, who also got me 0 points. So those 3 weeks, I netted negative 0.3 points with this tight ends don't matter strategy. And this shows the riskiness of it. It shows that, hey, there will be times where you get absolutely nothing. And you don't know when that's going to come. And that could potentially not come at good points. That's a little bit of foreshadowing for you. Week 7, I had Will Dissly. I identified him before he kind of exploded, and that was the week he exploded. Kind of like how I did with Jonnu Smith in 2023, and Will Dissly exploded for 16.1 points. Then in week 8, he had 9.1 points. Week 9, I had to switch off of Will Dissly and went to Adam Trautman, and I ended up with Adam Trautman for 1.4 points. Week 10, Tanner Hudson, he had 16.3 points. So once again, I'm right back up into getting good results out of my tight end. So far I've gotten really good results in week 7, 8, and 10, and an okay one in week 3, but everything else has been kind of lackluster. Week 11, Brock Wright got me 7.5 points. Week 12, AJ Barner got me 4.9. Week 13, Tommy Tremble got me 12.7. Week 14, Foster Moreau got me 6, and that's the end of the regular season. So looking back across the regular season here, in terms of good performances, which I would consider anything above 6 points, because 6 points is a touchdown, and we usually see that a tight end that catches a touchdown, you're usually happy with that result for that week. So if I can get over 6 points, then I know that I am in the positive for that week. In fact, it should actually be 7, because if you think about it, you get the point for reception as well. So the number of players who are higher than 7 over the course of this season, I had 5 of those. So 5 of the 14 weeks, I was able to get what I would call good results. Okay results, I would consider being in that like 4 to 7 point range. You get a couple passes, you don't get the lucky touchdown, but it's all right. You got a couple passes, you got some yards. That 4 to 7 point range, I ended up having another 3 performances in that range. So if we're looking at this in total, 8 out of the 14 weeks, I would say that I had a result that I actually liked out of my tight end position. The other 6 weeks were really bad. They were either really low scoring weeks or they were straight up zeros or negative numbers. And so when I'm looking at how this strategy goes for me next year, I can understand that in the regular season, about half the weeks I'm happy and about half the weeks I'm not, which for no value at the position is pretty good. I actually like that getting half the weeks covered off of literally investing nothing. Because that means if I'm able to identify the right player to invest in, maybe I'm able to identify Jonnu Smith at some point in this season, and I'm able to say, you know what, I'm going to bite this bullet, I'm just going to go and get him. Because maybe he was on a team that wasn't competing. Or maybe it's the Cade Otton manager, or the Tucker Kraft manager, or the Zach Ertz manager, and I can go get one of those guys. That's how I can potentially level up that position to get more results that are in that satisfactory range and not be stuck with somebody who is potentially putting up that goose egg into my lineup. So going on to the playoffs, week 15, I chose Stone Smart, who got me 8 points. Tommy Tremble got me 6.2 points in week 16. And then I said I was foreshadowing week 17 in the championship. I went with Tommy Tremble again. And I know I didn't have an episode for Championship Week, but I did look through, okay, who do I want to pick for the tight ends don't matter strategy this week? I chose Tommy Tremble, and he got me a giant goose egg. So the most important week of the season, Championship Week, if you had stuck with the strategy, you got a big fat zero when you got to Week 17. So looking at that result and looking at how it works over the season, seeing that about half of my performances are ones that I just do not like at all, they were straight up zeros in my lineup, is something where I realize that if you are trying to rely on these not good tight ends, you need to be okay with taking those zeros. It is much easier in a standard PPR league to be like, yeah, I can eat some zeros in my tight end position because I'm able to make it up out of all the other positions because somebody's not able to come in and be like, oh, I'm just going to drop 20 points out of my tight ends. That's just not going to happen regularly. It's not going to be something that you need to worry about your opponents doing. If you're good enough at all the other positions, all you need is that one big Lamar Jackson week, that one big Jaden Daniels week, even that big Brock Purdy versus Jared Goff matchup that we had Monday night of Championship Week, that can completely wipe out all of the difference that you see there. So it's just a variance thing that you need to be comfortable with, and it's something that I'm going to have to determine how comfortable I am with it, and it might be a team-by-team thing in terms of this upcoming season. So obviously, me being the person that created the Warp Tool at southharmonff.com, I went to the Warp Tool and plugged in, what does the Warp look like for this tight ends don't matter player? If you didn't know, you can go to the experimental tab, create a custom player, and just put in what their values were over the course of the season. So that's what I did. I created a custom player and let it crunch the numbers, and it spat out that I have created the 25th best tight end over the course of the season. When you look at it, it's like, okay, 25, it's not that bad. But that 25 is on season-long warp. It is on the A-Warp metric where it is counting only the number of weeks that that player is actually started in any lineup. And the problem is that isn't the best metric to use. Really, you want to look at A-Warp per game. And if you go to A-Warp per game, it is the 36th best tight end. There's only four tight ends who it even beats in a warp per game basis that were started at some point over the course of this season. And that was Dawson Knox, Eric All, Brenton Strange, and Luke Musgrave. Not really names that if you're in a standard start 12 lineup league that you're expecting any of those guys to be the starting tight end on a competing team. You are not expecting that any of those guys is somebody who you're going to go up against on a weekly basis if that team's actually trying to compete and make playoffs. If you look at the tight ends who are even beating your custom player tight end where you're just grabbing everybody off the waiver wire on a full season basis, the 8 games that Juwan Johnson was started had higher warp. The 9 games that Mike Gesicki was started had higher warp. The 6 games that Noah Gray was started had higher warp. All 16 of Dalton Schultz, now he was worth a little bit more, they had higher warp. Dallas Goedert, he only had 9 games started higher. Hunter Henry, somebody that basically a lot of people had written off for, yeah, if you give me a third, I'll end up giving you Hunter Henry. He drastically exceeded the warp of my custom tight end, and he exceeded it by almost 0.5. So what I need to go through is to figure out, okay, how valuable is this strategy by comparing to what is the difference in terms of the value? How much value did I actually save by not going and getting a tight end and instead relying entirely off the waiver wire? So the worst tight end in the top 12 before the season was Jake Ferguson. So I'm going to assume that for our purposes, if we're trying to compete, we're going to aim for getting a tight end in the top 12. And so Jake Ferguson, he was the worst one, and he was worth about a late second round pick. So you need to send your own second before the season to go get yourself Jake Ferguson in this hypothetical lineup start 10, 12 team league. And when you are going out there and paying that second round pick, that's a second round pick that you could potentially put into any other position. You could put it into upgrading a wide receiver, upgrading it running back, upgrading it quarterback. But importantly, you're not spending it at tight end if you're going with the tight ends don't matter strategy. That's the whole concept behind this. And the idea is that if you do have Jake Ferguson, then if somebody comes to you and says, I'm willing to pay you a second for them, that you should sell them Jake Ferguson to be able to then take that second and flip it around for something else. So over the course of the season, what can I actually get out of the rest of my league? What can I use that second round pick on? And so there's some names that obviously stick out. If you look at Cortland Sutton, if you look at Jerry Jeudy, but you need to really aim for those guys earlier in the season. As you got later in the season, people kind of recognized that, hey, they had some value. But where I would look at it is, okay, what's the upgrade path? Can I upgrade, say, from DJ Moore to getting myself up into a Mike Evans? Can I use that second round pick to find the right manager in my league to take my Michael Pittman after he's showing to be really, really bad over the course of the season and get myself into Jacoby Myers? Those sorts of differences are ones that are getting you that same difference between aiming for that 12th best tight end versus that replacement. And that's assuming that 12th best tight end ends up coming out close to that 12th best tight end in terms of end of season warp. And that's not a guarantee. It's not a guarantee that Jake Ferguson is going to come out as tight end 12 in warp, because he didn't. He came out as tight end 20. The difference between him and the replacement level tight end that I'd created over the course of this season was in fact only slightly over 0.2 warp. So I am able to take that second round pick and turn it into an upgrade at other positions during the season that get me much more value. And the part that I'm missing over the course of the season doesn't mean that much. So it looks like this is a giant win for the tight ends don't matter strategy. However, I'm still not convinced. I actually think that as I look into the data a little bit more, that it's not necessarily that I want to always play tight ends don't matter, because there's a clear difference when we get into what I call the haves versus have-nots at the tight end position. The haves at the tight end position are able to identify their tight ends are going to do well the upcoming season. In this case, if you take the top 12 tight ends from this past season, 7 of them finished in the top 8 of this year. There's only one tight end in the top 8, Jonnu Smith, who wasn't up there, who was identified pretty early on that he was going to have a good season. So if we look at those 7 tight ends, every single one of them is somebody that you ended up needing to pay a first or more for in order to get them this year. Those guys are Brock Bowers, George Kittle, Trey McBride, Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, David Njoku, and Sam Laporta. Maybe if you were in a league where people were not valuing as high, you decided to go after him when he was injured, you can get David Njoku for cheaper. But realistically, anybody that was competing, you needed to pay a first for David Njoku. And he was the cheapest one in that list. Everyone else who was in the top 12, your Kyle Pitts, Evan Ingram, Dalton Kincaid, Jake Ferguson, and TJ Hockenson. Kyle Pitts is the one tight end who everybody has been rooting for, who just hasn't done anything. And even then, he still finished tight end 13. Evan Engram, he got hurt. TJ Hockenson started the season hurt, and we knew that he was going to miss some of those games this year. And so really the only two huge busts were Dalton Kincaid and Jake Ferguson. So if you look at, okay, what was the cost to how much you got out of your tight ends? You had a two-thirds chance of ending up with the tight ends where the warp difference for those top eight versus the replacement level were over one. Over one warp in a no tight end premium league with just straight PPR. And that over one difference is huge. When you're talking about the difference between players, you're talking season-long difference between Malik Nabers and Michael Pittman. You're talking a season-long difference between a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown, who was an absolute league winner in terms of the points that he was putting up, and Jordan Addison, where he really only exploded in the playoffs. You're looking at the difference at running back between James Conner and Zach Charbonnet, who was somebody that really only appeared when Kenneth Walker was injured. And so when you look at those value differences, that's where you look like, okay, I need to make sure that the guys that I am getting on my team are either in that top set or I'm getting rid of all that value and trying to play the variance game before I buy back in later. Because you want to have one of these top guys when you get to playoffs. You don't want to end up going into your championship game, putting up a zero at the position where if you had gone ahead and you'd gotten yourself that Zach Ertz, that Cade Otton, then you might have just gotten lucky and had that blow-up game in the championship game. Because we recognize those guys were doing well. We recognize that, hey, you can go out and get these guys really cheap. They have great matchups. They're getting you lots of points. And if you had done that, you would have probably ended up winning your championship games. And that was something that I did not do. I never went out and replaced my tight ends who were either really crappy or were straight up waiver wire guys. And I never went ahead and actually bought back into the position for some of these guys who had that opportunity. And so I think that is the main thing that I've learned from playing this strategy this year. The strategy is not one to help you try and win the championship games. It's not the one to try to help you run the playoff gauntlet. It's the one that helps you on the season-long perspective when you don't have that team that is fully ready to get there. It's the one that shows you that the tight end position is a luxury. You want to have your tight ends be one of that top group where we know they're going to do well. That number might change year to year. And so that number might be something that you need to identify. What is that true tier? But in all the podcasts that I listened to last summer, the number that everybody kept talking about is the ones they're comfortable with was that top seven or eight tight ends. And so what is that number this year? We'll have to wait until the offseason, but I bet you it's going to be somewhere right up in that again. I bet you it's going to be those top seven or eight tight ends because out of the top 12, seven of them finished top eight. So we're pretty confident. We know who those guys are. We know they're going to repeat year over year. And so we're going to be confident in them the upcoming season. If you're competing and you have one of those top guys, they're worth it to keep. They're going to give you the points likely that you need and be able to give you an edge at that position. But if you don't have one of those guys, you have to look at the rest of your team. How short up are you in the quarterback position? How short up are you at running backs and wide receivers? Do you have the depth you think you need? Do you have the top end players you think you need? If the answer to all those questions is yes, I have everything I need, and you still have extra draft capital to spend, then maybe spending it to get one of those top tight ends of somebody who doesn't think they're competing this coming year is worth it. if somebody is competing, you need to find somebody who does not value that tight end the way you think they do. And that's going to be hard. You don't want to overpay for anybody at the tight end position. But if you can find that right manager who, yeah, they're starting to tear it down, but you know what? They've got that David Njoku sitting on their team. Go out and get that guy off of them. That manager who their team ended up just missing playoffs this year. They didn't have their first for this offseason. They're like, I don't know that I'm going to make it next year. Like, my team's kind of getting a little too old to keep going with it. I need to start tearing it down to try and make my 26 first be that 101. Well, go and get that Travis Kelce. Go get that Mark Andrews or that George Kittle off of them. Like, those are the kinds of managers that you need to target if you're going to try and buy into this realm. And you do that when you have every other position shored up, when you don't need the depth, when you have those top-end players. And that may not be something you do in the offseason. It is something you could do in the offseason, but maybe it's worth it doing that in the season. I don't know yet. That's something that I'm going to have to explore. I'm going to have to do potentially some soul searching, some hypotheticals on, because we aren't in the season. We're in the off season now. We can't answer these questions through going through experiments with them. And so that's ultimately what I'm realizing with the tight ends don't matter strategy. It's fine for the season long perspective, but it has a high chance of burning you when you get to the playoffs. You need to have a replacement by the time you get there. And so when you get to those playoffs, if you are able to buy into one of those top guys, great. And if you aren't, then you find one of those up and rising tight ends. You find your Jonnu Smith, your Zach Ertz, your Cade Otton, and you end up with going with one of those guys. Hopefully you don't accidentally end up with Hunter Henry and eat a zero in championship week. So basically, the tight ends don't matter strategy is the strategy that allows you to compete when maybe you weren't quite there yet before. It allows you to get that little bit closer, a little bit sooner, maybe speed up that rebuild, so that way you're competing and in the playoffs and participating in that lineup variance. What I'm going to do for this podcast as we're coming up through the offseason is I'm going to start going through some best ball strategies. If you have not gone and listened to Scott Connor's roster construction series over on the DD Fantasy podcast feed, you need to go and listen to that. I'm going to be riffing off of some of that as I'm going through a lot of those strategies, because ultimately, I'm trying to see if some of my best ball strategies that I know I've employed the past couple years are ones that either A, are actually worth it, or B, are even worth producing in a lineup league. So I'm going to be paying attention to that to help me find some baseline numbers, just so that way I know that I'm not straying too far from anything that is realistic from being able to say, oh, if you want to roster 30 running backs, that's fine. Obviously, you still need to have enough of every other position in order to have 30 running backs on your roster, even if you're, say, have a roster 40-player league. So I'm going to be paying attention to that. And so if you have not gone through that podcast series, you need to do that. He started it at the beginning of December, and it's one that is one of those great pieces of content every single year that Scott puts out, and you need to go and listen to it. As always, go to southharmonff.com, check out the Warp Tool. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me on Twitter at Dynasty Koopa, on Discord at KoopaTroopa8, join the South Harmon Patreon at patreon.com/southharmon, and talk to me in the Warp channel there, all sorts of places you can get in contact with me, and make sure that you know everything that you need to know about all the tools that we have. So once again, southharmonff.com, check out the Warp Tool, and I'm going to be referencing it a lot in this off-season series that I have planned, and it is something that you're going to need to be paying attention to as well in order to make sure you're getting the most out of your teams. As always, stay sharp, enjoy the fantasy offseason, and keep grinding that edge. I'll see you next week.